All right, we want to thank y'all for tuning in to Running Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also catch the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And now you can catch us every morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
And make sure you're following us on all the social medias, because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet, MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the talk, and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on studies that found that 1 out of 10 COVID-19 patients with diabetes die within a week. We also have some truly inspiring words from Mike Crenshaw.
We got Minneapolis is disbanding their police department. Black Lives Matter mural in front the White House. And City of Portland and PPD looking to finalize a new contract before the current one expires.
White angst is on full display in Fishtown, Philadelphia. And the cops love it. And the Louisiana cop fired for not knowing how the internet works in 2020. So let's hop right into that. Louisiana cop fired for posting racist comments about COVID-19 and black people. After posting comments on Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook that he was upset that the coronavirus hadn't killed more of our African-American brothers and sisters, the racist previously known as Officer Stephen Alcoin lost his job. Alcoin posted the comments under a live stream press conference of Governor John Bel Edwards, who was providing citizens with updates about coronavirus. A screenshot captured by McClatchy News shows Alcoin responding to someone that posted the virus was created to kill all the blacks, it's death. I'm not even sure what that means.
Whoa.
But his response was, well, it didn't work. How unfortunate. And just so we're clear, this is not an isolated incident. Alcoin also said, I can't wait until the next part of the plan is implemented and they see what's in store for their kind. How many times have you been to combat for the rights you think you deserve for leeching off this country? The Kaplan Police Department apologized for Alcoin's behavior before declaring that he was terminated. Here's a couple of words from Kaplan Police Department Chief Joshua Hardy. We're held to a higher standard than normal civilians, so you gotta watch what you do, you gotta watch what you say, he told KLFY. You just can't go on and post anything you want on social media. This is Alcoin's second round of employment with the Kaplan Police. The first time around was 8 months, and this time, just 3 months. What I found really interesting about that is the chief of police said, you can't just post what you want on social media. Not you can't be a racist in my department.
Look, you got to watch what you say. You can say it.
Just watch.
Watch. just watch. Watch it just, on the media.
Just, say it in the squad room, but not on the medias, guys.
Not on the medias.
Can we keep it clean on the medias? They're doing the screen shoot on the medias. They're capturing screens. So
they're taking pictures of the screen, printing those photos, sending them in.
It's 2020. Like, on some real, and I know you probably saw, I'm pretty sure you saw my post earlier this week of those people mocking George Floyd with the George Floyd challenge.
Yes.
Where you have one idiot with his knee on the neck of another idiot simulating, what happened. And I'm like, this here is proof. It's solid proof that racism is definitely a disease and it affects you cognitively. Like, no, it makes you dumber. It definitely makes you dumber, because how is it that you're taking digital evidence of yourself, you're uploading it into the world wide web, and you just think everything's gonna be cool in 2020?
I have a friend on my social medias who has been, over the last 2 weeks, taking screenshots from comments, finding people's places of employment, sending those screenshots, and then updating our timeline with the terminations and offer of employment rescindings, along with scholarship chops.
Wow.
And I applaud her efforts.
She is a member of the Justice League. What are you talking about? What?
Yes.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We need more of that.
More.
Now that I know she's out there, I will forward stuff to you. Like, get it to your peoples.
Yes.
Look, she's, yes. That needs to be a service. We need to pay her.
Look, straight up.
Yeah. No. Seriously.
Put a squad together.
Yeah, let's put that in motion. Let's put that in motion. Drop squad.
There were Black Lives Matter mural painted on the street leading to the White House. Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, the District of Columbia version, kicked off Friday morning with crews painting a commissioned mural which spans a whole two blocks of 16th Street between H and K Streets within Lafayette Square, which just so happens to be about a one-minute walk straight to the White House. This mural in bold font and hazard yellow paint reads, Black Lives Matter. And with the letter height reaching curb to curb, it seems this wasn't meant to be overlooked. A Green Street sign reading Black Lives Matter Plaza was also affixed Friday morning to a lamppost outside St. John's Church. That's where federal forces used munitions and pepper spray on Monday to clear peaceful protesters away and make way for Trump to take a photo outside the iconic yellow and white building, which was damaged by a fire during the protests. The move had not been publicly announced ahead of time. It looks to be another strategic move made by Mayor Bowser in her ongoing spar with Lil Fo 5 over the use of federal forces in D.C. Friday evening, Bowser tweeted a video of Black Lives Matter light projections on buildings on either side of the street and captioned, "We turn on the nightlight for him so he dreams about Black Lives Matter's plaza." There was a dispute this week about whose street this is. The mayor's chief of staff, John Fauchio, said on Twitter, Mayor Bowser wanted to make it abundantly clear that this is D.C. Street and to honor demonstrators who peacefully protested on Monday evening. Game set.
That is dope. That is amazing.
Did you see the happenings?
So I did see the images of the paint, of the mural. Uh-huh. I was completely like, is this Photoshop?
I'm that was my initial.
They didn't really do this, did they? And then I was like, oh, that's hard.
And then you saw the size of it when they got the aerial photos, and it was like, oh, this is, yeah, you can't pass this up. There's no, you're gonna,
yeah. The area photo was the best because you could see the White House's view. Yeah. It was perfect.
Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Good job. I think changing the street name was even.
The ultimate. That was the ultimate. Said, and wait, there's more.
You now reside on Black Lives Matter Plaza. Dope. Next story. Studies found that 1 in 10 COVID patients with diabetes dies within a week. The European Association publication for the study of diabetes found that COVID-19 patients who have diabetes are at a higher risk of death within 7 days. A group of French scientists investigated more than 1,300 cases and found that inside 7 days, 1 out of 10 patients had life-ending consequences, and 20% of them necessarily put on a ventilator. They noticed that 3% of the patients in the investigations learned they had diabetes after being hospitalized for COVID-19. The specialist said that 65% of the patients were men with the average age of 70. Elderly populations with long-term diabetes with advanced diabetic complications and or treated obstructive sleep apnea were particularly at risk for early death and might require specific management to avoid infection of the novel coronavirus, the researcher said. They found that patients younger than 65 with type 1 diabetes turned out well, and the 39 patients who were observed did not die at all after getting the coronavirus. The specialist said that discoveries demonstrated that insulin and other diabetic medicines didn't expand the seriousness of the infection and recommended that specialists can proceed with the patient's present course of treatment. So this one hit home for me, player, because I am a diabetic with sleep apnea. Bruh, yeah, I'm right up in there. I'm not 70, though.
Right.
You know, I'm still a spring chicken in some circles.
But no, that's alarming.
Yeah, man. I mean, pre-existing respiratory issues are just gonna have you out there. Period. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So sleep apnea is definitely a respiratory issue. I got diagnosed with sleep apnea after I was in the hospital for congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. So like, there were there were always clues that I had sleep apnea, just the snoring and, you know, you know, stopping breathing when you're resting. And but yeah, so when I heard this, I said, okay. Actually, like early on when they first started discussing the effects of coronavirus, and you know, they released the information of the different things that will have you in the at-risk category, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm checking off a couple of boxes in there. So, jeez. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's wild.
You need to stay hypervigilant, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, for anyone listening, please, like, take this seriously. Not just coronavirus, but most importantly, sleep apnea. Seriously, that's something that goes undiagnosed. I know it's a bunch of us out here, you know, snoring all crazy, and it's just something we're just used to living with.
Yeah.
I followed up
after you had, you know, your time spent dealing with yours, that prompted me to go, and I remember going and doing my sleep test like 2 weeks after that.
Good.
Let me just make sure I didn't, you know, fall outside of any ranges. So I was like, okay, cool. That, yeah.
Right.
Please do, people.
Yeah, please do. This is not me giving you my medical opinion because I am not, I'm not a doctor. I do have doctors in my family. So I am doctor adjacent.
Through osmosis, huh?
Hello. You know, I'm glad you recognize that. I'm glad you called the people's attention to it. You know? Degrees do, you know, they do transfer through osmosis.
Yes.
So now that's been put on the table, I can give you my adjacent opinion. Go get checked out, please. Do a sleep test.
And thinking about talking about things being put on the table, Minneapolis City Council members moved to defund and dismantle their police department. Minneapolis City Council announced today that they intend to dismantle the police department, answering a growing call to defund and abolish the police, not just in Minneapolis, but nationwide. Council President Lisa Bender told CNN, "We committed to dismantling policing as we know it in the city of Minneapolis and to rebuild with our community a new model of public safety that actually keeps our community safe." Bender went on to say that with the 9 votes secured, they have the necessary majority of the 13-seat council. The pledge was made as an acknowledgement that their current system isn't working. She went on to say, "We need to listen, especially to our Black leaders, to our communities of color, for whom policing is not working, and to really let the solutions lie in our community. The idea of having no police department is certainly not in the short term," she added. After analysis of the 911 calls, council members found that most were for mental health services, health, and EMT and fire services. Jeremiah Ellison, city councilman for Ward 5, tweeted a similar message Thursday, writing, "We are going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department. And when we're done, we're not simply going to glue it back together. We're going to dramatically rethink how we approach public safety and emergency response." Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey was booed by protesters Saturday night when he refused to commit to defunding and abolishing the city's police force. And he had on the "I Can't Breathe" mask.
Did he?
He did. He lost them. He lost the crowd right before.
Man, that's not how it's done, sir.
Nah.
Yeah. I mean, this is amazing news.
The thing that is lightweight trippy, listeners, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but I did come across that anonymous video. I sent the link. Did I send it to you?
Yeah.
So what's wild about that is when there were some rumors about things coming up, I went to go check. I checked all the threads we have and I can't find that video.
The anonymous link.
Yes. And I'm like, I know I'm not tripping. So I just left it alone. But Anonymous did say that they would make sure that this happened. And now I'm wondering if some information had popped up that made
You know, it's so funny. Like, so when I saw it, I was like, okay, Anonymous is up here. They up in it. You know, they've been quiet for a minute. And then I listened to it and I was like, I don't know. This sounds like a pump fake. I mean, if you're going to do it. Because if this needs to be done, and we all agree it needs to be done, you don't need to wait. Just do it, B.
Yeah.
Just do it. So
yeah. Well, did you? So in that, video. I know I sent you guys the link, but in that, where I got that link from, there was also another link that was not a video. It was to show that, basically saying, we're not playing. They had all the officers' information, including bank account or credit card numbers, every address, all their employment history, all of that. They released a file to show, like, we're not playing what you got. This is already, yeah.
Oh, they were for serious.
Yeah, so that's where, okay. Yeah.
While we're on the topic of policing, yes. Philly police stood by as men with baseball bats protected Fishtown. 100 men with baseball bats pretending to be inmates newly released from Blackgate Prison in Gotham City decided to patrol Philadelphia's Fishtown neighborhood with baseball bats, shovels, and hammers. They say they were just trying to defend their neighborhood from looters and protesters. Let me tell you, as a greater Philadelphia native, allow me to offer a little context. This is a predominantly white neighborhood. I should have got to the part where no one got arrested and police stood by and was cool with it. Had I done that, I'm pretty sure you would have guessed they were white, right? Anyways, there's footage of them assaulting people and accounts of them spitting on people and using racist and homophobic slurs. Photos showing police posing with these fine gentlemen after the 6 p.m. curfew. Mayor Jim Kenney offered his criticism, saying the group's actions were antagonistic and the city doesn't condone armed vigilantism. He said that he was disturbed by reports of officers giving out high fives to members of the group. And Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said the force does not condone any form of vigilante justice or taking the law into one's hands. Despite that, officers gave residents permission to guard a Target in South Philly, again, after curfew. While all this is going on, peaceful protesters were getting tear gassed and major arrests were happening in neighborhoods like Kensington and West Philly. Back in Fishtown, concerned residents were calling 911 to report feeling unsafe, and they were told by an officer on the non-emergency line that people aren't doing anything wrong. Scott Hearn said he walked by a crowd when a truck pulled up and a man got out with a hatchet. Hearn said he yelled, "This guy has an axe." A video posted to social media by a WHYY reporter who was later assaulted shows the man yelling to Hearn, "Mind your own effing business. You're lucky I ain't got my effing gun." Hearn said he asked an officer, "Are you going to do anything about this? He has a weapon." He said the officer told him, "Stop escalating the situation."
There's too many videos floating around right now of this same setup.
Right.
All around the country.
Right.
In these towns. And one of them I just saw, it was high school students walking through the streets and the people sitting in front of guarding their stores from these kids just walking, trying to trip the kids. Then you see one man run out and get in somebody's face. There's a scuffle, but he punches a teenager.
What?
And then bucks up on a young lady like he was going to knock her out, like cocked all the way back and then seemed to have, you know, thought about it in that moment. But again, the kids stayed vigilant. They were recording everything and were just like, keep walking, because they were just going through, just, you know, chanting their chant. And it's just so many people standing out, arms folded, shaking their heads, making, you know, their little slurs and stuff being thrown. But I've just seen a bunch of these reports. I've seen articles of these different cities and towns. Let me not even say cities. These towns that people are doing this same thing. And how many of the images pop up where it seems that the law enforcement is hanging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving friendly reminders that, hey, you know, we don't want, you know.
We all good.
I would love to know what it feels like, you know, what it would feel like to be able to give my guys a call and be like, bro, let's get all of our guns right now and go post up on Alberta. Let's go post up on Killensworth. Let's stand in these areas and just line up and see if we have any backing and support
from the law enforcement.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, in some ways, you know, I could imagine to people of every ethnicity that may believe we're in a post-racial world, I could imagine that all this is extremely startling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could imagine that. But it really does say something when this isn't just happening in the places that we traditionally thought, or that is traditionally reported as, you know, back hills and you know, down south and middle America. Yeah. Now, this is happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Coast to coast, this is happening. And coast to coast, we are watching how the police are reacting, responding, supporting these efforts.
Yes.
And it's happening in full view of cameras and microphones. Like, yes, none of this is hidden.
Not a worry.
It's, I mean, this is the reality. This is the reality that we've been experiencing this entire time. I'm curious to see, you know, what the other side of this looks like, really. I want to see more defunding efforts. I really do.
Yeah.
I want to see who's going to beat Minneapolis to the punch, because the mayor is pushing back hard. I feel like another city is going to be like, oh, word. We're going to do it first.
That's quick.
We're going to make history. We on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Definitely, we'll be able to run this back.
Yeah,
here shortly.
We should do like a bracket. Doing eliminations.
I'm with it.
Start taking bets. Which city going?
We miss March Madness, so you know we. Well, we have the city of Portland and the Portland Police Union looking to finalize a new contract. The Portland Police Association bargaining session that was currently scheduled for June 1st, 2020 between the city and PPA has been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic, including restrictions on public gatherings in Multnomah County. The next scheduled date is June 19, 2020, when the city is hoping to finalize the new contract, as their current 3-year contract is set to expire on June 30th, 2020. There's been increasing pressure from community groups calling on the city to increase penalties for officers who use deadly force. The city of Portland is expecting a rally for stricter discipline guidelines in the new contract. During the first formal meeting between the city and the police union back on February 7th, guidelines were set for the bargaining session itself. This was a public meeting held at PCC Southeast Campus, and at this point, here are some of the items that have been agreed on so far. The city and PPA will alternate hosting the bargaining sessions. The city will host all public meetings, while the PPA's meetings will be closed to the public. The city will be able to make public tentative agreements reached by the bargaining committees. Sections that will be in the final contract but haven't been formally approved by City Council and the PPA will be up for public inspection, allowing us to follow along with the decisions being made throughout the negotiations instead of each party independently sharing the agreed-upon contract days before the City Council vote. Limitless sidebars. Now, both sides agreed that during bargaining sessions, the opposite party can choose to discuss a proposal in private, unrestricted by time limits. Both parties will issue a joint press release after bargaining meetings. This was proposed to keep both sides from throwing shade at each other through solo press releases. Here's what still needs to be hashed out. Who can attend the private sessions? PPA is being asked to consider allowing city employees who aren't a part of the bargaining committee, like staff or city commissioners, to attend PPA's closed-door sessions to help advise the bargaining team on certain decisions. Appearances by guest experts. A proposal for subject area experts or people with a special interest to the bargaining table during negotiations. If approved by the PPA, this could mean allowing people with lived experience of police misconduct, family members of people injured or killed by PPB officers, perhaps to have a seat at the table. Now, that's huge.
Right. Yeah, that right there. That's the one I was waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I would love the abolishment altogether,
mm-hmm.
but this is a move in the right direction, man. This is definitely a move in the right direction.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how this pans out.
We going to see in a couple weeks.
Real talk. Up next, we have some inspiring words from Mike Crenshaw. He addressed everyone that gathered at the Sunrise Center this past Saturday for the I Am George Floyd, I Am a Man rally.
Thank you all for being out here today. Thank you for sharing that song, Joe Bean. It's a trip because, you know, I moved out here from Minneapolis. I stayed on the south side and the north side in my teenage years. And when I spent my time on the south side of Minneapolis, I was off and on the areas around 38th in Chicago, Lake Street, Cedar, Franklin, Nicolette, Lindale, Uptown, all up through there. And, you know, there was quite a few instances in which I was violently engaged by police officers. And quite a few of those instances, there are two in particular I remember very clearly, were instances in which I had to take the abuse that they were giving me. My body wanted to fight, but I knew that if I fought back, I might not make it. So I decided to just take the violence that they were putting on me. But the thing about it is, you know, even if I laid there, I still didn't know if I was going to make it home. You know what I mean? And that was a common experience. None of that shit ever made the news. Everybody knew that that was just everyday life, being a brother, being a sister, being black in America, you know? And so now we all have the technology and things are appearing on our screens every day. I was telling the people yesterday that the morning I found out about George Floyd, I made the mistake, and I know a lot of us do this, I made the mistake of looking at my telephone before I even got up, went to the bathroom, got a drink of water, any of that, right? And this is common. Every time we look at our screens, we see one of us getting murdered by police. To the point where we get desensitized, you know? But you got to wonder, what absorbing all that trauma, what does it really do to you? We still function. We still go to work, you know what I mean? We still have conversations. We still play with our children and whatnot. But you are absorbing this thing, like, every day of your life, right? So when I first started looking at the phone, I didn't realize. I saw the brother on the ground. I saw what was happening. Something looked familiar. I saw in the back of the cruiser, it said, Minneapolis, what they doing? So I'm looking at the brother getting, you know, basically the carotid arteries on the neck, right? On the right and left side of the neck. That carries the blood flow to the brain. So when we train, you know, in the grappling arts, we understand that if you reach, even in kids play, we put them in, I'm going to put you to sleep. You know, 30 seconds, you fall asleep. In 3 minutes, you're actually brain dead, y'all. Because that oxygen and that blood flow needs to get into the brain to make the body function so the brain can command the organs to do what they do. So the cops knew what they were doing. Cops trained. So I'm still thinking he's going to get up, y'all. I watched the video to the end, and of course he doesn't get up. Now, what follows is something that I've been, as far as being a conscious individual, is something that I've been hoping for all my life. Because what follows has been sustained resistance, sustained rebellion. To the extent that I haven't seen it. I did a demonstration yesterday over there on 64th and Foster, right? You know, and coming home, man, it was like for 2 miles on every intersection, it was white people out there with signs. Every intersection in the rain. I have never seen that in my life, you guys. I want to say something, too. I'm going to say a couple things while I'm up here to the youth and to the parents of the youth. Okay, I apologize for some of the profanity that might slip into my speech, but we are existing in a state where we are fighting for our very survival on a day-to-day basis. You know what I mean? And so just to be aware of the reality of the conditions that we live in is going to be worse than any of the words that I'm going to use to describe what we're talking about, right? So prior to George Floyd getting murdered, we had Ahmaud Arbery, right? We had Breonna Taylor in a week's time, y'all. Then we know that there's an unprecedented amount of people dealing with violence, being targets of police terror every day, right? We know that the United States military is in countless countries murdering people all the time. We know that there's people from these working class neighborhoods and poor people that just want a chance to get a higher education, and so they're in the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and they're out there doing the same thing to people all over the world, right? We know that this economic crisis that we're facing as a globe is unprecedented and universal because of a health pandemic that's been exacerbated by capitalism, right? Within that context, people were already through. People were already not understanding what the future was going to hold as far as if they were going to be able to feed their families and support themselves, have access to the benefits, the things that they work for. But the juxtaposition of that uncertainty was this new sensation of what we could actually, for once, imagine leaving behind. I remember looking up in the sky a few weeks into the pandemic, and the clouds were clearer. The air was cleaner. I went up to Mount Tabor. I swear to God, the birds were like cooling in a way I'd never seen before. And then I'm starting to see pictures of Metropolis all over the United States and looking at the skyline and the horizon, and it's clean. And so I'm starting to ask myself, I'm doing my work from home. I'm making more efficient strides in my work without having to commute. I'm spending more time with my kid. And I'm starting to question the validity of a system that's based on fossil fuel consumption and profit for the few at the expense of the masses anyway. Right? So there's all these different dynamics happening at once. And it's in that context that that cop, that group of police did what they did to our brother George Floyd. And they did it on camera. And they did it with so much confidence. The look on that cop's face, he was so smug. He was looking at him like, man, I don't even have to have emotions attached. I know I'm going to get away with this. And I'm going to make eye contact and just blatantly murder somebody in front of you. And I'm looking at it like, I'm rooting. I'm the brother that was telling him, the main one who was, so I'm like, please, please just jump, kick, get him off. I asked the crowd this yesterday. I said, you know what the difference between them and us is? Do the police have more rights than we have? They are paid servants. They don't have more rights than us. They're human beings just like we are. The difference between them and us is we do not enforce our rights, okay? So we can talk about violence and destruction, and we can blame Antifa or the outright. But the fact of the matter is, the first few nights I was downtown, y'all, I saw everybody out. In one of the whitest cities in America, the people that was going up in them stores looked just as diverse as this crowd. And that was a beautiful thing to me, okay? So people can be mad about the fact that some windows got broken. These major corporations got insurance for that type of activity anyway. They ain't taking a loss on that. It's not about that. It's about the rage that we have felt that's cumulative. You know what I mean? Generations and generations of rage. You know how they talk about we inherit trauma? We have multi-generational trauma is inherited in our bodies, in our bloodstream, in our genes, in our DNA. You think our youth don't know in this uncertainty that they see in the adults? You think they don't know that there's a problem that they're inheriting that they do not deserve? That's why we're out here in the streets right now. This is the beginning. This has been going on forever. We know that people want to be like, well, all cops aren't racist. I know two black cops. They my people. I grew up with them. They really, really struggle with the racism on the force. It's not about whether or not every cop is racist. The institution of policing is a white supremacist terroristic institution. The history of the slave patrols. Come on, y'all. Y'all be impatient with me. I don't want to go on too long. I just want to connect the dots, though, because not only do I want to connect the dots to see that all these things are interrelated and interconnected, none of this exists in a vacuum, just like George Floyd's life wasn't lost as an isolated incident. It was lost because it's part of a historical process that allows these police to feel comfortable being assassins in our communities. You know what I mean? But because of the unprecedented moment that we're in as a global civilization, for real, because we don't know if the ecosystem is going to survive intact because of the results of white supremacy, patriarchy, and capitalism and the way that they've extracted resources and disregarded life. You see? Talk about America, the greatest country. The only reason America is great is because the economic system was built on the back of genocide of the native people and the forced enslavement and displacement of African people. Without centuries of free labor and the resources and consolidated wealth extracted, then the police wouldn't be so heavily armed. The Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines wouldn't be all over the world trying to do the same thing everywhere. You see? So what I'm curious about, and I make art, I make music, I do my thing in the classroom. What I'm curious about, though, is if we as a community, not only locally, regionally, nationally, globally, and I see it happening, y'all. People all over. I got my brothers in Uganda hitting me up talking about, man, it looks bad over there. You know it's something when a place that we've been told is one of the most poorest places on earth with lack of opportunity, third world country, you know something's going on when they're looking at you like, man, I feel for y'all in the United States. Real talk. Everybody is in solidarity because they know how bad it is. We have nice, pretty looking things and we have awesome infrastructure. So while we go forward, y'all, in this moment and think about what we have the opportunity to walk away from and think about how do we as communities begin to be in solidarity enough to enforce our rights, right? I want us to think about diversity of tactics. I want us to be those of us who are able to get in line and go wait at these city council meetings and find out where the police union meeting is when they're talking about allocation of budget and funds. I want us to be down there if we can do that because the police need to be defunded. Some of my brothers and sisters, they talk about abolition of the prison industrial complex and abolition of the police, right? And I remember I used to hear people saying, even though I'm radical at heart, I'd be like, man, I'd be kind of skeptical. But what I'm starting to see now is I'm seeing seven-figure funds being taken out of police departments. I saw that Portland Public Schools, they cut their relationship with Portland Police Bureau because they know they don't want the youth to be traumatized walking into a building where they're supposed to be educated. So this is a moment, you guys. Things are happening. And things aren't just happening because we're begging for them to happen. It's happening because we're in the streets tearing this up. We know. Diversity of tactics. This moment, the emotional fire is not going to last forever. So the inspiration has to be long game, marathon. We have to be parts of organizations that are moving with sustained, organized efforts to decolonize, right? There's gonna be opportunities to vote for my people that don't want to vote because they don't have trust and faith in electoral politics. I'm not gonna talk bad about them. I'm not gonna get in their face or on social media and discredit them because they came up in a white supremacist system and they saw that even when Obama was in office, we were still getting murdered in the street, right? So we have to be able to do everything, do all of it. And we're gonna be doing it. We're gonna have to dig deep. We're gonna have to look to each other for support, respect, solidarity, to try to craft some certainty, to keep sharpening our analysis. Because they know what they're doing. They have the resources, y'all. But we are the people. There's more of us. There's always going to be more of us. And that's why they have to invest in violence and weaponry, because that's the only way they can get down. All right? Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for inviting me up, y'all. One love. Peace.
For those just tuning in, that was Mike Crenshaw speaking at the I Am George Floyd rally this past Saturday, organized by NAACP and the Coalition of Black Men.
Make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run Up the Numbers, hosted by Can Jones and DJ Ambush. This episode also features Mike Crenshaw. Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Shireen Hassan, Sham Shawan, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson. Music by C's.